Welcome to the Closter and UK Data Service collaborative podcast exploring how research data can influence policy to improve life. I'm Jenny Blows, Digital Communications and Events Manager at Closter, the UK's partnership of social and biomedical longitudinal population studies. And I'm presenting alongside Rodney Appleyard, Communications and Stakeholder Manager for the UK Data Service. Joining us on the panel today are Dr. Steve McCurchin, Director of the UK Data Service, Rob Davies, Head of Policy and Dialogue at Closer, Dr. Emily Marchant, Lecturer in Education at Swansea University, and Natasha Matibi, Social Sciences Lead at the Parliamentary Office of Science and Technology and Strategic Oversight Board Member of Understanding Society. In our first episode, we discuss how we can raise awareness of research data among policymakers so that it can be used to guide better policymaking. So let's get started. Over to you, Rod.
So it's a pleasure to be with you all today. Could you please introduce yourself individually and briefly explain your background and experience with research data? So if I could start with Steve, that would be fantastic.
So I'm Dr. Steve McCurchin. I'm Director of the UK Data Service. I've been in the role since August of 2024. Prior to that, I was the Director of the Australian Data Archive from 2009 to 2024. So I have had a long-term role in supporting access to data in two countries and collaborations in other countries as well for coming on 20 years now.
Thank you very much, Steve. And if we can now go to Rob, if you can tell us about your work and your experience with research data. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rob Davies. I lead the policy and dialogue team at Closer, which is the UK's partnership of UK longitudinal population studies. My team consists of communications, public affairs and policy research specialists, and we're working to increase the visibility, use and impact of UK longitudinal population studies, data and research. My background is more in the kind of policy world, so I've worked kind of in and around governments and parliaments across the UK for the past 25 years.
Thank you very much, Paul. Next we move on to Emily, if you could give us a brief introduction and your experience in research data.
Sure. Hi, my name is Dr. Emily Marchant. I am a lecturer in education and a child health researcher in Swansea University's Department of Education and Childhood Studies. Prior to that, I was a PhD researcher and an ESRC postdoctoral fellow within population data science in Swansea University's medical school. My experience with research data kind of starts, well, from my PhD baby, I called it, which was the development of a primary school network called Happen, which started out as a kind of local project in Swansea. And my task during my PhD was to expand this across Wales. So it's now a kind of national cohort study and a platform with over 50,000 pupils' responses on a self-report survey. But I've also worked with data within the SAIL data bank, so looking at anonymised electronic health and education records.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Very good. And next we come to Natasha. If you could briefly tell us about your role and your experience in research data. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So my name is Natasha Matibi and I lead the social sciences section of the Parliamentary Office of Science and Technology in the UK Parliament. And I've been in this team for around 3 to 4 years. I started in 2021 and I have also worked in the health section in that team as well, because my background is actually in global public health and policy. So I have been working with research data, in specific longitudinal data, for quite a few years now, especially in my role as a social science lead. I am also on the Understanding Society Strategic Oversight Board, and I've been in this role for almost a year as well. In specific, I would say the most prominent briefing that has used longitudinal data has been the post brief on the impacts of remote and hybrid working, you know, for workers and organisations. And this policy briefing has actually been our most popular briefing that has been downloaded on the UK Parliament post a website. So it shows that utilising this data and showing how it's very robust and useful in policy is one of the reasons why I'm very much interested to speak on this topic.
So much. That's fantastic. Really good. Thank you. So next I'll hand over to Jenny for the next question to get into the meat of things. So.
Thanks, Rod. And thank you all again for being here with us today. As we start our discussion, we explore the kind of insightful information that research data has to offer, information that has the potential to be used to guide better policymaking. To start things off, I thought it'd be great to get an understanding of whether there are any new and innovative ways in which we can raise awareness of research among policymakers. I'll direct this question over to Steve to begin with.
Yes, it's always an interesting challenge trying to figure out how to get connections into policymakers. I mean, I find sort of various ways of sort of connecting, often co-location is quite helpful. But so how do you deal with the problem of distance and disconnection there? Fundamentally, a lot of the sorts of communications approaches that we take are an important part of that. Being able to express a lot of the outcomes and outputs of the use of the data that we have in sort of concise and immediate ways, such as it's digestible, becomes an important part of that. Things like infographics, you know, short briefs and so forth, really a key part of that communication process. But then finding mechanisms whereby you can kind of get that in front of the policymakers in an effective way. And often that involves essentially one-to-one or small group communication is an important part of that process as well. And so that's part, you know, one of the roles of both the, you know, working with, in our case, the depositors in the data service, and then, you know, alongside that our engagement and access teams, you know, working directly with users and eventually with the policymakers flowing on from there. It's sort of those, here's the broad story, and then, you know, we're sort of the personal touch in the mix there. And that's not easy, but I think it's an important part of that process.
Brilliant. Thanks, Steve. And a great point there about how important it is to get that information into the right format before you take that next step to get it over to the policymakers. And so, Rob, over to you. Do you have any reflections on what Steve has just highlighted?
Thanks. Yeah, I agree with what Steve said. And I think one of the words that Steve said kind of jumped out at me, and that's digestible. And I would add accessible to that. So I think it's absolutely critical to kind of speak to the target audience. And I think one of the most powerful ways I found in terms of mobilizing research data, particularly longitudinal research data, is through storytelling. So it makes it more accessible. You're able to kind of tell a story, and it really resonates with the target audience. I think one of the kind of consistent pieces of feedback that I get from policy actors, whether in governments, parliaments, is the importance of evidence synthesis as well. So not necessarily pushing forward kind of one paper or one finding, but looking across, you know, the kind of landscape and looking across the issue, you know, potentially looking at generations, generational change, which again, longitudinal data is really powerful at communicating. I think a couple of other points I'd be keen to make is, I think the importance, and I'm not sure it's innovative, but perhaps it is, of linking research to real world challenges. And I think related to that, it's absolutely critical to listen to policy actors and learn what their evidence needs and their gaps are, and then meeting these. And one of the ways that researchers can do this is looking at the areas of research interest documents published by UK government departments and parliaments across the UK, and more recently by regional bodies, including local councils and combined authorities. And these documents give a really clear kind of steering indication of their evidence needs for researchers to directly respond to.
Thanks, Rob. Brilliant point there about ensuring that researchers are mindful of what questions are in the minds of policy actors and the value of synthesising evidence. Moving over to Emily now, and in light of what Rob's just said, how do you think the research community could work more closely together to raise greater awareness about the value of research data?
Yeah, great question. I think it follows on very much from what Stephen and Rob have said. I think we're seeing such a shift now in how we value the non-academic outputs, as important as the academic outputs, if not more important, really, and how we can align it to both policy and practice. I think things like this, so interdisciplinary podcasts, it's very dependent, I suppose, on your field. My field, I sit very much in between children's health and education. So that opens up doors, I suppose, to work in more of an interdisciplinary way. But I think in terms of how we can work together, I think what Rob said was a great point. The parliamentary area of research interest opportunities, and instead of just responding to consultations and calls with, you know, one paper or key finding, is working in working groups, research groups, to compile kind of multiple sources of evidence and to share that with parliamentary committees. And I've had experience working with a parliamentary committee in Wales who put out an area of research interest, very much timely aligned to my field of health literacy, which led to a body of work. So yeah, I think it's opening conversations across disciplines, aligned very much. I think we used to be trying to bridge the gap between research and policy and practice, and now it's actually how can we align with them.
Thanks, Emily. So you highlight the strength there of working in groups to draw together multiple sources of evidence to share with parliamentary committees. Now, finally, same question to you, Natasha. How do you think the research community could work more closely together to raise greater awareness about the value of data?
Yeah, thank you. I think I'll just follow on from what has previously been said, because it's all very valid, and I come to the conversation speaking as an impartial science advisor. So I'm also in between research and the outputs of the data, but also how to engage with the actual policymakers. So for me, it's really important to highlight those things that have been mentioned already, ensuring that the research is accessible, it's relatable, and that the researchers and the institutions are actually aware of the actual mechanisms and the pipelines, as well as the actual network. So what I wanted to actually share is that my team itself, Post, we have a unit called the Knowledge Exchange Unit. And so we're there to really try to facilitate and to support researchers to engage with Parliament through various activities, because we are aware of the barriers, but we know that there are ways to actually overcome these barriers. So, for example, we also do training and guidance. So this can be, for example, a seminar online on how to write for the actual policy, audience, how to understand how Parliament works as opposed to government. These are actually two separate ways of engaging, but the audience is the same, and also knowing which networks to use. So, for example, there are things like networks like the university policy engagement network. There's also CAPE that has actually finished funding, but there are certain institutions that have funding to actually proactively engage with these institutions. I also wanted to talk about how we aim to actually diversify different types of research data and how to feed and that into Parliament. And lastly, on the pipelines as well. So we have something called the Knowledge Exchange Roundup. So that's the way we try to be innovative in how we engage with researchers all across the UK. So, for example, the Knowledge Exchange Unit in Post sends a newsletter to all of the knowledge mobilisers across the UK in more than 300 research institutions, which shares call-outs for the evidence that we seek to some of the evidence for research institutions to share to Parliament. So this could be for a different select committee inquiry, or this could be for a fellowship, and these are all different pipelines in which we get the researchers and their data into Parliament in front of the policymakers. So to summarise, like, essentially, I think it's ensuring that the research being shared is accessible and relatable, and that the institutions know of the different mechanisms and pipelines, and that they are a part of different networks. And I think if you summarise in those three, you're then giving the researchers and their data and different ways to increase the awareness and use of the data.
Great. Thanks, Tash. Really important points there about making research accessible and relatable. And thanks for sharing these valuable resources from the Exchange Unit and the networks that are also working to help researchers with this. Rob, did you have something you wanted to add to Natasha's point?
I wanted to emphasise one of the points that Tash made, which I think is a really important point about the different roles of Parliament and governments in the UK. Parliaments play a scrutiny role and governments are in the delivery business. And I think it's really critical for researchers to understand this point, because you have to have different approaches, different methods, different mechanisms, use different language to engage and connect with these different audiences. That very scrutiny role is very, very different to a delivery role. So it's absolutely crucial for researchers to understand that.
So true. There's definitely that need to tailor approaches depending on whether researchers are targeting Parliament or government. And Emily, am I right in thinking you've had some experience of engaging with an area of research interest recently? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
I responded to a call for Senedd Cymru's Health and Social Care Committee about health literacy. thinking as an early career researcher that I'll hear absolutely nothing and nothing will come from this. And to my surprise, I did have a response and I followed it up and I was slightly persistent and said, I'd love to chat more because I've got more to tell you. And I just want to pass on my advice to other early career researchers, really, because how we help, you know, find people and connect them with data, a fantastic avenue is responding to these ARI calls and parliamentary groups. You know, I think Rob and others have made great points, are there to scrutinise policy. And part of it as an ECR is actually understanding the landscape of it all and how it works, attending training sessions within your university. Or I went to a conference and I went to a skills building seminar about how to write a policy brief, and that kind of transformed how I actually think about research. But just to encourage ECRs to just keep an eye out, sign up to email bulletins and things from parliamentary groups relevant to your research, because it really can open up so many doors in communicating your findings to a wide range of audiences, not only parliamentary groups, but in how you disseminate those findings after. I think often we don't feel senior enough or don't feel important enough, but actually we're just the people that parliamentary groups want, because we're still quite proactive and still fairly optimistic. So hopefully, yeah, it can open up doors for future early career researchers and their research fields.
That's brilliant. So encouraging to hear that you had that experience and some really great advice there for ECRs. Natasha, did you want to add something to Emily's point there?
Yes, I did. And thank you, Emily, for that live example. I think it's really important to show people that it's possible as well, just to encourage them, you know, to just take that a leap of faith to share your research and to have a chat with them. So I also have a few points, Emma, and one live example. I'll try to be quick. So similar to what has already been mentioned, when you are submitting any evidence to any team, so that can be either the that could be a government consultation or for an inquiry, ensure that it is so clear and accessible. We really underestimate how busy policy teams are, so you want to have it in a actual clear structure. Have things that we write in academia is often the actual other way around. So we have our core findings at the end. You don't want that in policy. You want your core findings at the very beginning, clear and concise. And you want it to be engaging, and use a table if you have one, so that you are engaging the reader. You also want to communicate in a way that is not just clear, but it raises the awareness that you understand why it's relevant. So what I'm trying to say is to hook that to something that is current, or hook that to something that has happened in policy, or to a recent government announcement. Just really show that you understand why it's important. Something else that's really key to do is follow the APPGs as well. They may not have power to legislate, but they have chairs that are always a member of parliament. So follow one that is of your core research area. The other one that I've already mentioned, sign up to Posts KEU. They do send things every week, so this will include an opportunity to engage with parliament, as well as what post briefings have just been announced. So you can also submit your evidence to an inquiry as well as a post briefing. And the other one that I was going to say is follow up for the actual government's alerts as well. So there's the parliament alerts, and there's the alerts from a government. Also, the KEU have a web page that shows various resources. So we talk and we inform the public on what types of fellowships may suit you better. So we have fellowships for PhD students as well as early career researchers. So you want to have a look on there to figure out where you are in your career and how you can feed into work there. And the last thing that I was going to say, which touches on some of my previous points, was different types of networks. So I've already mentioned, for example, UPenn, but also there are think tanks or third sector organisations that engage with researchers. So one of our stakeholders, which is the Nuffield Foundation, they also have an early careers research a network as well. So have a look at some of the other some of the other institutions that may not be in policy but have really good networks and good partnerships with policymakers or with parliaments. And the example that I really wanted to quickly share is that when I did do that briefing on hybrid working, I met with an academic who was so helpful in their research, so much so that once I was invited to do a roundtable discussion, and that was organised by the International Public Policy Observatory, I had taken it upon myself to then invite that fellow academic, you know, because I knew that I only knew things from a secondary research kind of perspective, but this researcher was doing all the primary research. So stay in contact with the people that you're engaging with in Parliament, and in government, because once you do, they are there to help plug you into other policy conversations. And that roundtable was so important and so powerful that it turned into a briefing that has been used and cited internationally. So those are my examples. I hope they are helpful.
Thanks, Natasha. Brilliant advice there about those initiatives that researchers can tap into. And it's so inspiring to hear the power of those networks and partnerships can have in getting research noticed. Steve, I can see your hand up. Do you want to come in here?
A quick follow-up on Tasha's point about there are multiple ways to sort of to engage with policy and policymakers. And that point about the third sector engagement, I think is actually really quite an important one. Certainly our engagement team at UKDS, you know, that's one of the pathways that we've seen is actually really quite important for that transfer of knowledge, is not directly actually to the policymakers, it's through the third sector and, you know, community organisations who actually enable that knowledge transfer. It's just a sort of a point of support there.
Yeah, such a valuable role there that the third sector and community organisations can play. Rob, did you also want to come in?
Yeah, I thought that Tash made a really important point about what I often say is reversing your academic paper when you're communicating, when you're engaging with policymakers. So, yeah, academic paper, you know, you start off with the methods, you know, generally, as Tash said, there's the kind of conclusion and discussion at the end. It's reversing that because that's what's really, yeah, really important and what policy actors are, yeah, really interested in. I just wanted to do a bit of a plug, to be honest with you. So Closer has a policy hub, which has kind of guidance and advice on how to engage with policy. And I think two things in particular that I'm really proud of is that we've developed a couple of interactive tools to help researchers mobilize their research. So one of them is a template, a form to create an impactful policy briefing note. And the other is a template to help researchers create a response to a select committee inquiry. What we found, particularly from early career researchers' feedback, is that dealing with looking at a blank piece of paper is really, really difficult. So what we've done is try to provide some tools to help them mobilise their research more effectively.
It's actually really good to hear that you also have those resources available to help researchers create impactful briefing notes and responses to select committee inquiries. Now, I just want to give you all an opportunity to add any final comments you might have after reflecting on what the other panellists have discussed today.
Yeah, nothing to say, not specifically to this, but actually as you were going through, Tash, sort of talking about the post reviews and so forth, one of our real challenges is figuring out what the connections are there and working backwards, particularly from outputs to policy, is one of the biggest leaps there.
I think that's something that we, even as a team, we're trying constantly to find new KPIs in a sense of impact. And so Post have a board, and the board have been saying, like, we know that Post is doing amazing things. We know that the Post notes are reaching internal and external teams, but it's about finding that thread. So I'm quite fortunate in a sense that I have that, like, list or case studies. And there's a few that I left out, actually, where we can showcase that a Post note went into an inquiry or that it was read by a member, but it's not very often, for example. So it's something that's hard to monitor, but it's there. It's a very subtle thread. So happy to have a chat with you about that, as well as how to encourage researchers, you know, to not lose that like steam, because obviously with ref, it takes a bit of time. But I personally love researchers, so I even write sometimes like a little letter for like an academic that I've engaged with, to share with their institutions and their funders. But I know that not all people that work in policy like have that time and space, but I'm here for it. I'm like, yes, they helped me, it was great.
What a great point to end on, highlighting that there's even more support out there for researchers. Thank you so much to all our panellists for sharing your suggestions today on how researchers can connect with policymakers, and also your tips on how to communicate their research in ways that will help their findings be useful and used to guide better policymaking. That's all we have time for today, but tune in for the second episode where our panellists share some examples of where research data has been used to guide policymaking, discuss some of the challenges that researchers face in getting their research into policy, and learn how Parliament assesses the research that comes in to decide what evidence to use.